the day one pick, Josh Doctson. Want to go around and get everybody's grade on this one and see if we like it. I'll start myself because I'm going to give an A minus. I said before the draft, I think that they needed to address this position with Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson both turning 30 at season's end and both being free agents, so they addressed the need there. I would have liked to see them take Laquon Treadwell. Personally, I had him ranked higher than Corey Coleman and Doctson, the two other wide receivers taken in the first round, but I'm happy with the pick. It addresses a future need.
Yeah, and to give you credit, you're the only one in this room that did say they were going to take a wide receiver in the first round. I thought you were crazy. Just, I mean, not crazy, but you know, the fact they need a defense. I mean, Jamal, remember, he did say that. He did.
Yes, he did.
He did say that. Did. Now you're just upset because they took the wrong guy.
Yeah, right? But I think that Doctson is certainly, you know, a good player. I watched a lot of his highlights there. And I've heard a lot of Doctson comparisons to DeAndre Hopkins. I think Treadwell's more like Hopkins personally. But I think either one I'm fine with. I'm kind of glad they didn't take Corey Coleman. I don't think they really needed a smaller receiver.
You've heard comparisons to... I've heard even Alshon Jeffrey on one end, even it could be a possible Larry Fitzgerald. Nobody knows anything at this point. I get that. I totally understand that. But a guy that has a chance to be an impact player like that, like I mentioned, the height, the red zone threat for me is big for him.
So what's the grade, George?
I'm going A minus. I'll go with you on that.
All right, Noah, you're Mr. Big 12.
Well, but I'm not a big receiver in the first round guy, which is the main reason that I'm giving him a B. There were plenty of receivers out there. There was that lot. I don't think any one of them was that much different than another one.
Yeah.
They say he was the top guy on the board. It's kind of hard for me to believe. I can't believe that Miles Jack wasn't the top guy, pretty much.
Are you calling Scott McLuhan a liar?
I think that this reaffirms that what we say every year where they say, oh, we'll always take the best fit, but they end up going for a guy that they've, you know, fallen in love with. And clearly they like him, which is good that they get a guy that they like. I would have preferred to see them go and address defense because defense is what needs the most amount of help. But they did that in later rounds, so that helps sort of, you know, make up for it. And I don't think that this is a bad pick. It's a guy that can come in and contribute from day one.
It's not a position of need now, but it will be next year, as George alluded to with the contracts of D-Jax and Garçon. You can't replace guys like that with mid-round talent.
Right.
You have to bring in a guy, a number one, you know, first-round caliber pick. So in that regard, Doctson will get some playing time this year, has a year, you know, under his belt next year, whether they bring back one or neither one of the two. And you don't have to rely on a rookie next year that you bring in to be your number one. So you have a foundation there. So I give it A minus. And like George said, he's 6'2". We do not have guys over 6 feet. Plus, he has a huge catch radius. He catches everything that comes to him. He high points the ball, you know, better than most corners. So in that regard, he gives us something that we didn't have already.
All right, and Dave, I want to ask you real quick, too. You know, where does this leave guys like Andre Roberts and Ross? Are they going to be able to make the roster next year? And what's your grade on this pick?
Those guys are learning to speak Canadian because they might not be here that long. I think we've all mentioned, it's good to have a big receiver. I think at that point, at that deep into the first round, they didn't have a guy on the defensive side of the football that would be a game changer. I think this guy... even though he's not a game changer in capital letters, he's a guy who can produce in the red zone. That's where this offense bogged down from time to time last year. When you can trade all of a sudden field goals for touchdowns, you've got something going on there. He doesn't need to be the guy coming in here because there are receivers who have played a lot more than he had. There's a lot of experience, so there's no pressure on this guy to be the man. He can learn the ropes before maybe becoming the man in the future. I'm going to give it an A-. I thought it was a good move. I think we have all... but you never know. For all we know, this guy goes on and doesn't do anything. We'll learn that over the course of the next 3 years. I'm confident he'll play well, though.
Okay.
Wait, he could go on and be Rod Gardner, right?
Yes. You know what? Gardner caught 71 passes 1 year
under
him.
Why do you know that?
Because you got to know.
He's the Gardner stats guy.
Gardner was productive. Yeah. And if Marty had stayed, Gardner probably would have played well over the years, but instead Spurrier in that mess.
Wow, yeah.
So you have to trust the system. You have to trust that this guy will play well under Jay Gruden and will play well under Scott McLuhan in the future.
All right, so let's stay with you, Dave. You are Mr. ACC, an expert in all things Athletic Coast Conference football and basketball.
Wow.
I want to ask you about Sua Cravens, the safety out of USC, and, speaking of the ACC, Kendall Fuller, cornerback out of Virginia Tech. Now, Kendall Fuller, hearing rumors that he might not be absolutely 100% after he was drafted, the knee could be an issue. Is there anything there that you're hearing about?
I'm concerned anytime. It's like if you go to a car lot and you see this really nice car, but one of its wheels may have restructuring. You always have to be a little bit concerned about that. With the signing of Norman, there's not as much pressure to have this guy start immediately. He's a good kid, good football mind. He comes from a football family. His older brothers have all played in the league, so he's got that going for him. He could be a difference maker, maybe not this year, perhaps in the future. He's a tough guy, used to playing special teams because that's what they do down there in Blacksburg. I like him as a pick. Maybe not this, and you treat this year maybe as a redshirt year for him. Cravens, I like what he could do. He might be like a nickel line. You know, he could do a lot of different things in this defense. And it's nice to have a defense and an offense, for that matter, this year that have been built all the way back to when Bruce Allen took over as the guy who was in charge of things. There aren't gaping holes like there were seemingly year in and year out with Vinny Serrato, where, oh my goodness, there's one offensive line who's not being held together by duct tape, or, oh, the defense isn't a complete gas fire. So I like they're two good picks, and the defense does need to be addressed this offseason. The Norman signing, these picks may bring it a little bit closer to where they can be out of the 20s, which is where they were last year.
Day two grade. What do you got?
I'm going to give it a B+ with, then again, for all we know, I'm giving it a B+, though.
All right.
With a sticker.
Jamal, how you feeling about it?
I'll give it a solid B. When it comes to the Fuller pick, I like it. It's good value for the third round. I mean, both of these guys, you know, somebody somewhere had first round grades on both of these guys, and they were able to get them in, you know, the second and the third. With Fuller, and when it comes to his injury, I don't think the whole year would be a redshirt year. I'm hearing that he should be. They're hoping he's ready for OTAs, most likely training camp, if not OTAs. But the beauty of it is, and not just with the Norman signing, with bringing back Blackman, with bringing in Toler, you have enough depth there. And that's why they could get rid of Culliver. You have enough depth there where he doesn't have to step in right away. Even if he's not healthy, he'll have time to heal, get to learn the defense, develop. He will get some playing time, you know, if he's healthy. But it's not a rush job. You know, I don't think the whole year is blown, because I don't think he's not in a Jalen Smith type of situation where he has to redshirt. If he comes in a little dinged up, it's fine. You know, we have enough depth there, you know, to get through. When it comes to Cravens, it's interesting because this is a new type of position that the NFL is seeing. Dan Buchanan in Arizona is having a lot of success with that. Also, Mark Barron and started to say St. Louis, but the L.A. Rams now, he was a safety, had trouble in Tampa Bay. They moved him to that hybrid safety linebacker position. He started to have success. So it's interesting to see how Barry is going to use that position and utilize him in that situation. It gives offensive coordinators a whole lot to think about, because from any given play, you don't know where he's going to be. So it gives us an advantage in the fact we have a piece on the board that we can move all over the field from formation to formation and play to play. And it gives offenses a whole lot to think about.
All right, Noah, what do you think? Do you think they needed to get rid of Chris Culliver?
I definitely was surprised that they let him go this early.
Yeah.
It was maybe kind of out of left field, but that says that they're clearly confident that probably even if Fuller isn't 100%, that they still have the depth. And I to sort of cross-compare for sports, you know, when you have great depth at a position, when you have a guy like Norman coming in, you have those questions already answered, it allows you to make a pick like that, which I think is moving from a position of strength, like the Warriors did with Kevon Looney this last year. They were able to take a guy that was probably a top 10 pick who fell all the way to the end of the first round because he had a knee injury and he wasn't going to be able to contribute right away. And they said, okay, we don't care. We don't need him this year. We'll take him. We'll stash him. We'll develop him. We'll let him play in the D League and he'll be ready to help us in 2 or 3 years and be that guy who's of that higher caliber. Like Jamal said, people probably had a first round, you know, grade on him without that injury. At least a few teams probably did. So to get a guy that you can feel okay about, you know, not needing right away, to get a guy who flexes into a lot of different defenses, I think, you know, the more that these spread offenses, we see sort of offense move its way up in football from the lower levels, that the spread offense that was 15 years ago in high school is then, you know, the last 5 years in college, and the more that defenses have to sort of align themselves in these speedier, wider packages. I'm interested to see where a guy like Cravens fits into that, where you can use him in different looks and disguise him depending on kind of what you need. And I think both of them give you a lot of flexibility, and you're picking from a position of strength, and you're filling what I think was the biggest hole, which is, you know, that defensive secondary. So I really, really like day two. I gave day two an A.
Day three, Dave. Matthew Ioannidis, defensive tackle out of Temple. Nate Sudfeld, quarterback out of Indiana. Steven Daniels, inside linebacker out of Boston College. And Keith Marshall, running back out of Georgia. How are you feeling about how the Redskins ended on Saturday in the 2016 draft?
They made the picks they needed to make. I would have preferred if they had maybe gotten up into the top 105. And it's an arbitrary number, but usually the top 100 guys in each and every draft, they contribute. You kind of flex that to 105, because in the last 5 or 6 years, the Skins have been able to get some guys in the top 110, 112 players who have been productive. After that, it's guys who might play special teams for a year or two, maybe hang on. I would have preferred had they gotten a little more active in those fourth and fifth rounds, climbed up into somewhere in the top 110. They're not bad picks. There'll be guys who will, you know, play. One might contribute. For every Alfred Morris who comes in and plays well and exceeds expectations after being picked in, I think, 173 or 174, there's a Derek Morris, another running back, picked in 173 or 174, who doesn't see a regular season down. So they're good picks. They should be good guys, and it'll be interesting to learn their stories during training camp.
George, we talked during one of the roundtables we did here before the draft, and you had mentioned that they'd be taking a quarterback and a running back. Mm-hmm. Did you expect them to take a running back so late, round seven, or did you think they might grab one a little bit earlier, like a C.J. Proceis out of Notre Dame? Being that, you know, Matt Jones is presumably the starting running back here, but he could probably use some help, right?
Well, I think, for me, the biggest question mark still is the running back position. And then coming out of this, they did take him late. You're right. I don't think I expected it that late, especially because Matt Jones has a lot of growing up to do. Now, between year one and two, it's a big year, especially the offseason. He's going to be the guy. He had issues last year. He had the injury, had the fumble issue. But I think that he's going to have to grow up a lot, maturity-wise, to be this to be the number one back. And I think that is still a question mark for me. I still think they need to bring in a Pierre Thomas, which they had last year, and for that veteran presence. Mm-hmm. Chris Thompson's still around as well, but that for me is still the biggest question mark. You're right. I didn't expect them to go as late there. The quarterback, we all expected that's going to be a training camp, project, some depth there, some snaps. And I don't think Jamal likes it, but we'll see where.
No, you don't like Nate Sudfeld. What is it? Because he's too big? You don't like the 6'6", 234?
That's the best thing about him is his size. With Maryland being in the Big Ten now, I get to see, more of these guys. And I just never saw anything out of Sudfeld that was great. Now,
do you want Hackenberg instead?
No. Mm-mm. Maybe Dowdy from Western Kentucky, who they brought in for a visit, or Brandon Allen. I would have gone that direction. But Sudfeld, I mean, looking at him and looking at how he plays, to his credit, he does come from a run-based offense.
Yeah.
So he did not, looking at his highlights, there's a lot of underneath stuff, a lot of intermediate routes. Every once in a while, he'll hit it over the top. And he does have a little bit of touch on his deep ball. But, he doesn't do anything to wow you. Mm-hmm. But, with that being said, it's developmental. So I'm not going to, jump out the window over Nate Sudfeld.
Right. Yeah, you're not expected to call his name at all this year.
No.
Well, and not to paint with too broad of strokes, sort of generalizing quarterbacks, but I my tendencies are to stay away from guys who are mediocre at major programs. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a guy who's great at a major program, that's usually probably a good sign. If you don't get something out of a guy, in a Big Ten setting with talent around him, I don't see where the upside is. I'd like to see, if you're going late, go get a guy with some upside. I mean, like you said, I like guys from smaller schools. You see what guys like Tony Romo have done in the NFL. You see what guys like Ben Roethlisberger out of Miami of Ohio have done, where you can see a guy produce without that talent around him, and you can sort of spot that. Paxton Lynch went from being that guy to shooting his way up because they beat Ole Miss, and they had sort of the big showcase this year where they, he was probably going to be a fourth-round pick until they got the exposure that they got this year and won some of the games they did. And when you can find those guys, those are those really good guys to draft because, hey, maybe they're not ready. Maybe they can't make that extra step with the speed of the NFL. But But some of those guys can, and if they have the raw tools, you can make something out of that guy for the future. I don't know where the upside is in Sudfeld.
And speaking on some of the other picks that we had, Matt Ioannidis, the D lineman out of Temple, he's a guy that can play up and down the line. If you put 15 more pounds on him and want to make him a true no tackle, you can do that as well. From what I've heard and what I've saw, Senior Bowl practice and 1-on-1, they said this guy was pretty much unstoppable. So, you know, he's a blue-collar guy. A lot of the guys that we got, I heard comparisons, like he's a poor man's Jaron Reed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his name is Steven Davis. Davis, the linebacker we got from Boston College, he's a thumper. I watched some highlights and tape on him. He's a pure thumper, pure run stopper. Not the most athletic guy, you know, sideline to sideline. You know, some people will say he's the poor man's Reggie Ragland in this draft. But guys like that, those are core guys. I think Marshall, for me, might be the biggest steal. This is the guy when you talk about you want speed out of the backfield. Ran a 4.31 at the combine in the 40. There's only two people in combine history, Dree Archer and Chris Johnson, to run faster 40 times than him, just to put it in perspective. And he's coming off a knee injury. The thing with him is it's not so much physical. He's got to regain confidence after coming back from that knee injury to, you know, get back to the form that he once had. You know, it's all mental with him. But if he puts that together, plus, he's 5'11", 219. We're not talking about a scat back with 4.31 speed. We're talking about a guy who can take and absorb contact with that type of speed. So if he has a confidence mentally, I think, you know, he can be a nice combination. But taking him 7th further lets me know, like George said earlier, they are looking for another veteran to bring in. And I said this to George, you know, a couple days ago, and it's just a thought. And it might be a little far-fetched, but let's say you don't bring in Pierre Thomas right away. What do you do? And I just want to get everybody's opinion on this real quick. What do you do if you don't sign Thomas or another veteran back and Arian Foster declares himself healthy? If you're Scott McLuhan, do you kick the tires? If the price is right, what are your thoughts on that one?
I think you have to. You have to kick the tires. I mean, you got to do your job at that point. You got to bring him in and see what he's got. If he's 100% healthy, if he wants to get back, if he's, you know, doesn't think he's going to be a guy that's going to demand a ton of money.
Well, no, because at this point, he does not have to be your the main back anymore.
Right.
You know, he can, you keep him healthy by offsetting him with Jones and Marshall and Thompson or whoever else that you keep. But I don't think at this point he demands big money. Let's say he's looking for a 1-year prove it deal.
I mean, obviously there's a lot of talent with Arian Foster. If he's healthy, if he's able to come back and be 90% of what he used to be, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that necessarily fits into that scheme as well as the other options. He's a little more of a speed guy, a little more of an edge rusher. Like
you're right. The situation would have to be
situation. You probably end up rewriting a little bit of the playbook around his skill set, which isn't the worst thing in the world. It gives you some diversity in how you attack the line, but it's not a perfect fit. You know, if it fits, I get the sense that he probably fits better in another scheme on another team. It's, you know, I don't know that there's that guy that you point to. I think if there was, we would all be pointing to him and saying that's clearly the guy who should be here. The fact that they waited until 7 suggests clearly that they still have offers out or are looking to do something else, because right now I don't. That is definitely an issue right now.
I don't think you can go into this season with Matt Jones and Chris Thompson.
No, I mean, and that's why I throw that out there because, I mean, you know,
maybe they've talked to Thomas. Maybe they've got some, assurance.
Possibly. Anything could be possible. Yeah. I do think Marshall has the talent to be a steal. I was kind of upset because I wanted Kenneth Dixon was one of them, and I told you about Dixon a long time ago, George, that he was one of my favorite running backs in this draft. And when he was in the 4th round, I just knew. Well, Billings was there also. So I kind of wanted Billings and I kind of wanted Dixon. But, you know, as Ozzie Newsome does, he plucked him up. So now he's in the area, but he's up 95. I would much rather him be here. But with him being gone, you take Marshall. I still think Marshall has the upside in the tools, especially the speed. I mean, that's the biggest thing about him is the speed. But taking him in the 7th round, that, like Noah said, it leaves the door open you know, to bring in. And that's why I brought up the name, because there's not a whole lot of veteran running back names out there, mm-hmm. any ones that you would want anyway.
Right.
And when there's a name or a player of that caliber in Arian Foster who's still out there, you got to throw it out there, at least for discussion's sake.